Today on Annenberg Radio News.
You know, if someone wants to drink alcohol whenever they want to, they should have that right. If someone wants to grow marijuana, they should have that right.
People across Los Angeles are voicing their opinion on the new ballot initiative that could legalize pot in California. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, March 25, 2010. I'm Heather Hope. The Metropolitan Transportation Authority Board of Directors unanimously approved an extension of the Metro Gold Line today. The expansion will run from Pasadena to Azusa and will cost $810 million. Construction could begin as soon as June. The 11-mile extension will begin service in 2014 and provide service to Arcadia, Monrovia, Irwindale, and Azusa. It's not a trip around the world, but perhaps it's the closest thing to it in Los Angeles. Visitors to the California Science Center can now experience environments from across the globe at its new exhibit called Ecosystems. Annenberg Radio News' Amanda Herman was at the opening.
Hundreds of kids ran from the islands off the coast of South America to the flash floods of the desert and back to urban Los Angeles at today's opening of the California Science Center's newest exhibition wing. 11 different rooms display diverse ecosystems from across the globe. The broad range of environments and creatures makes it the only one of its kind in the U.S. William Harris is the Senior Vice President of Marketing for the Science Center.
There's so many favorite things that I absolutely love. What we hear from the public is they love everything.
The live habitats and hands-on activities nearly doubles the amount of exhibition space at the Science Center. Harris hopes this will draw in people of all ages.
We have to be lifelong learners. It's very important, and that's what the Science Center is about. We're trying to keep people thinking and understanding and exploring throughout their lives.
Eighth grader Sarah Holmes came to the exhibit opening with her school.
My favorite part is going to the pole. Looked at everything. I loved it.
7-year-old Kiara Scotland enjoyed the interactive aspects of the exhibit.
My favorite part was when I was in the desert and then it was flashed and all the water came, because you get water on your hands.
The exhibit features a 24-foot-long transparent tunnel through a massive kelp habitat. It is the only walk-through kelp habitat in the world.
You have a chance to really understand what is it like to be a species in a kelp forest. There are all kinds of wonderful experiences for the public to stimulate learning.
More information can be found at www.californiasciencecenter.org. Amanda Herman, Annenberg Radio News.
Hare Krishnas and other groups are not allowed to solicit donations at Los Angeles International Airport. That's the word from the state Supreme Court today. The court upheld a longstanding L.A. city ordinance banning Hare Krishnas from asking for money at LAX. Hare Krishnas have been battling that ban since the city made it a law in 1997. The court distinguished between soliciting immediate donations and asking for future contributions, which the court says is not allowed and a protected form of speech. Grassroots advocates for recreational marijuana have succeeded in getting an initiative to decriminalize pot into the November ballot. Ariel Levy Edwards has more.
State bans on recreational marijuana use are now a step closer to going up in smoke. Californians will vote later this year on a measure allowing people over 21 to possess up to an ounce of pot. Secretary of State Deborah Bowen certified yesterday that the petition had received more than 500,000 valid signatures. Dan Newman is a strategist working with the campaign. He says legalizing the marijuana business could reduce drug-related arrests and help California raise some much-needed green.
It's estimated by California's tax regulators that it would bring in over $1 billion per year that could be used by a state that is obviously in dire fiscal straits right now.
The initiative would also let people grow up to 25 square feet of marijuana, and it would allow local governments to further authorize the production and sale of marijuana. Toking up in public, in the car, or around minors would still be prohibited. Community Alliances for Drug-Free Youth spokeswoman Amy Hendel says the bill still sends the wrong message.
Even if you try to slap an age limit on it, it's been proven that when perception of risk is lowered, then the amount of use goes up. How can our kids say no when the adults around them are saying yes?
Hendel says she's not convinced the bill will save money.
In 2005, the state of California spent $19.9 billion on substance abuse and addiction and only collected $1.4 billion in tax revenue. If marijuana is legalized, it's only going to add to that deficit despite the tax money that may be brought in.
Early polling shows most Californians are high on the idea. A field poll taken last April found 56% of state voters favored legalizing and taxing pot.
People understand that the current marijuana laws just simply aren't working, and that includes law enforcement officers and judges and teachers and doctors. You not only would benefit from the tax revenue, but you would also take away the business model for these violent drug cartels.
If the measure passes, it will still conflict with federal law banning marijuana use. Ariel Edwards-Levy, Annenberg Radio News.
We sent out Camelia Abuada to ask Angelenos how they feel about the possibility of that marijuana will be legalized in the state. We got mixed reactions.
My name is Cleary Clark. I'm a resident of Los Angeles County. I think the government will really prosper and we'll start. I think you're going to see a change. I think if you have marijuana controlled like this, it will open. You're going to decrease crime. You're going to see a different kind of environment going on in America in the next few years. I think it's about time they started making steps towards these actions.
Kathleen Leonard and I've resided in Los Angeles for 75 years, and I think this is a disgusting, just horrifying thing, and I will do everything I can to stop it.
What do you think the outcome will be?
Well, there's so many loons in California, it's possible it would pass, and I think that's very, very, very dangerous, and it's sending a horrible sign to children. And it's just another step of ruination. I mean, if you have drunk driving now, you're going to have all these loons popped up on pot and all that driving around. You can't tell me there's not going to be more accidents and everything. It's disgusting.
My name is Christian Daly. I'm a student at USC, and I'm a resident of LA County. I think drugs have the forbidden fruit quality. I mean, you can't have them, so if you can't have them, you're going to want to get them and everything. So if you give it, or if you have... If you give people access and, you know, give them the green light to have it, they might not use it as much. But on the other hand, they might. So,
I'm Steve Miller, Deputy District Director for California State Assemblyman Mike Davis. From a state's perspective, is something that many of the Democrats were in favor of. Many of these types of ideas are in place that we hope would get a lot of these young people in our areas. Get them out of the jails, and more importantly, get the revenues that the state is so desperately needing. When we look at an economy and which is already devastated, we hope that these types of proposals go through, so that we can better tax and manage the state.
My name is Rajit. I'm a PhD student at USC. I do not believe marijuana should be legalized for anybody except for medical use. Because I see people misusing it or using it for the wrong purposes. And I don't think legalizing it will help that.
Hi, my name is Paige, and I'm a resident of Los Angeles, California. Legalizing it for everyone would overall help the economy, obviously, because it's over $1 billion in tax revenue for the government. It's a non-addictive plant. It's not processed in any way like harder drugs are. And it's not addictive like tobacco is, which is legal right now in the United States.
And for the weather, it's going to be a little breezy tonight, so get those jackets out as the temperature gets to the low 50s. Expect it to be about the same for tomorrow with high 60s throughout the day and low 50s by night. But get ready for a sunny Saturday this weekend with highs in the 70s to make for a bright spring day. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we'll hear from a doctor who has a unique perspective on why so many young black men are homicide victims. Today, the City Council Energy Committee is reviewing a 2.7-cent rate hike proposed by the Department of Water and Power. The DWP and the mayor support the hike, which will provide general funds for the city and green initiatives. The City Council claimed authority over the hike and fears of backroom dealing. Today, the committee will submit their recommendation, either to approve the hike or send it back for further consideration. And if they do approve the hike, L.A. residents and businesses will be in for a surprise on April 1st. Annenberg Radio News' Karen Marcus explains how a Department of Water and Power rate increase will affect customers.
Before you turn on the sink or take an extra long shower, think twice. You'll be paying more for every drop you use. The Department of Water and Power proposes a 20% increase for businesses and an 8-28% increase for customers depending on utility use. One of these projects, championed by DWP and Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, is ensuring businesses are green. When the rate hikes start April 1st, they will penalize businesses that are not green by increasing their DWP bill 22%. Households will also pay more. The more you use, the more you'll pay. Those who don't use much water are considered Tier 1 customers by the city. Those typically include apartments. Nearly 60% of L.A. residents are considered part of Tier 1. Tier 2 and Tier 3 typically include customers who live in homes. According to DWP, Tier 2 will see increases by as much as $16 a month, and Tier 3 by $52 to $65 a month. The City Council is considering recommendations. Karen Marcus, Annenberg Radio News.
While some are upset about the DWP hikes, Mayor Villaraigosa stands behind the hikes because he says it will create more green businesses, and now has Al Gore standing behind him. Today, Gore announced his support of the Mayor's Clean Energy Trust Fund, which the DWP hikes will go towards. Gore says the initiative is innovative, bold, and will lead Los Angeles to a sustainable future.
The people of Los Angeles have always had bold new ideas that have shaped this country's future. And you've watched some of those ideas spread across the rest of the country. And now, as you know, it's time to shift towards renewable energy and become more energy efficient.
The Renewable Energy Trust Fund could increase residential DWP bills to as much as $3.50 next month and will store the money to provide funds to meet the mayor's goal of 20% renewable energy by 2011. The mayor says the fund will create 18,000 green jobs. University professors from around the country are gathering today to see how a unique archive of thousands of interviews with Holocaust survivors is being used to teach university students. Tracy Oppenheimer has the story.
You might recognize this as the theme music to Steven Spielberg's 1993 Schindler's List. The Oscar-winning film spawned years of Holocaust memorializing, and now, 52,000 archived testimonials of survivors. Spielberg started the Shoah Foundation a year after his film was released. The organization has now spent over 15 years finding Holocaust survivors, videoing their life stories, and using them to teach at universities across the world.
Steven Spielberg finished filming Schindler's List and as a result began this organization. It was as he was filming Schindler's List that he realized he wanted to do this.
Talia Cohen is one of the directors for the Shoah Foundation. The foundation teamed up with USC in 2006, and today Cohen is supervising a two-day conference for professors, librarians, and archivists from 25 universities to see how the tapes are being used in the classroom.
It's a huge milestone for us. Our goal is not to just have this archive that becomes dusty and sits on a shelf, but that it's a real living archive that is used so that their stories continue to be heard and learned from, and that they, as survivors, are also educators and can continue to educate for generations to come.
Roy Schwartzman is one professor who has integrated the archive videos into his curriculum at the University of North Carolina.
The audiovisual archives show that the Holocaust is a continuing set of experiences that transcends time, and it transcends the particularity of the individual survivor's experience.
He uses these videos to make Holocaust stories jump off the page in a way that written documentation could never do.
What we are dealing with is living organic narratives.
And then came that 19 March that the Germans occupied territory. They came in, and that was the beginning of the end.
That was Auschwitz survivor Esther Orwitz, who's just one of thousands of documented survivors whose stories are now available in 32 languages. The foundation has collected testimonials from 56 countries, too.
It gives a personal dimension to history and helps, I think, students of any age relate to what they're hearing.
The testimonials have captured the stories of Jewish survivors, as well as homosexuals, Jehovah's Witnesses, liberators, political prisoners, and others. Tracy Oppenheimer, Annenberg Radio News.
Homicides are the leading cause of death for black men across the country. I talked to Dr. John Rich at Drexel University, who discusses this alarming trend in his new book called Wrong Place, Wrong Time, Trauma and Violence in the Lives of Young Black Men. To tell me about the inspiration of your book.
One day was walking through the hospital when I ran into one of my surgical colleagues, also an African-American man. He was telling me about a young man that he had taken care of who had been shot, come into the hospital, and he as a surgeon had done the repair. And then just a few weeks later, he was driving to work and he heard on the radio that the same young man was dead from another gunshot. And so he and I were interested in better understanding what it was that led young men, and particularly to become recurrent. Currently involved in violence.
What's the mindset of many doctors who help these patients suffering from violence?
There's so many of these young people who come into urban hospitals that it almost has become not news when they get injured, assumed to be at blame. I saw in my colleagues, and really perhaps held myself, was that young black men didn't just get shot, they got themselves shot. But it's more complicated than that.
What are the deeper effects of trauma that many victims suffer?
Young black men in the inner city, many of them are suffering from the very same post-traumatic stress disorder that we see in those other populations. And so that if we first try and understand the trauma that they've been through, we can treat that trauma. Many of the young people we see as victims, it turns out, were not involved in anything illegal. So it's wrong of us to assume that we know the circumstances. But it's also true that the consequences of trauma, the flashbacks and nightmares, and when these young people are in communities where there are lots of guns and they feel really unsafe, sometimes they go get guns, thinking that somehow that will make them safe.
Now, do you have a program set up that helps these victims?
Right now in Philadelphia, we have a program called Healing Hurt People. The idea is that anyone who comes in as a victim of violence, we don't just treat them and send them out, but rather a social worker talks to them. The idea here is to change the way that the medical care system thinks about victims of violence. And we're beginning to see this happen all over the country. Here in Los Angeles, there are programs that seek to intervene with victims in the emergency department and in the hospital to prevent them from becoming victims in the future.
You just heard from Dr. John Rich at Drexel University. Now for our weekly segment, For the Record. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals is now using the Octomom, Nadia Suleiman, as their spokesperson. PETA placed a sign in front of her La Habra home that says, "Don't let your dog or cat become an Octomom." Suleiman signed on with the project for $5,000 after she faced eviction for not paying her mortgage. She and her 14 kids are going to be the ones telling you to spay or neuter your pets and prevent them from producing big litters. And here's an update on a story we've covered extensively a few weeks ago. University of California Regents have apologized to black students at UC San Diego after a flurry of racist acts on campus last month. UCSD students hosted a party called Compton Cookout that mocked Black History Month. Party organizers asked guests to dress ghetto and speak with a limited vocabulary. The Black Student Union pointed this event, among others that followed, as proof that more minority students are needed on campus. The Regents say they'll change admission policy to increase Black student enrollment across all campuses. At UC San Diego, Black students make up less than 2% of undergraduates. Now we check in with Alex Goldstein to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thanks, Heather. We got a lot of stuff for you guys tonight, but our main story, Jay Vim, a USC student, he suffered a heart attack, cardiac arrest, while running in the L.A. Marathon this weekend. He's in the hospital recovering. We spoke with friends, his RA, hear from all of them about him and his condition a little bit later on tonight. Also, bullets, bricks, voicemails, craziness in Washington, D.C., violent attacks on Congress members. We'll have more on the reaction in Washington and how they're taking the attacks there. All that and more tonight at 6 on Trojan Vision. Back to you, Heather.
Thank you, Alex. keep clicking on our website, AnnenbergRadio.org, for more news about South Los Angeles. Well, that's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Camelia Abuada, Elizabeth Warden, Chris Foy, and Ryan Yunez. Jessica Flores is our producer. Timothy Beckworth and Richie Duchon are the executive producers. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Heather Hope.